You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
So you say there's a chance. Welcome to the Massive Report podcast, where there's a chance of nonsense somewhere, but also feelings, because we need to pay tribute to the beloved PIPA, which we will do in just a moment as we get another edition of the Massive Report podcast going, winding down the season and parsing the odds of Columbus Crew playing beyond this Sunday. They ain't good. We'll see if Ori can give us any hope. A little math, a little magic, and we'll see how all those come together as we look at both and hope for more games ahead. Like and subscribe if you would. Ori Bedetar is here, Alex Stanek, Sam Fahmy. I'm Brian Phillips from CD92.9. And we, even though we're not there, we're there in spirit at Saucy Brew Works. Right, Ori?
Yeah, we're not at Saucy Brew Works, but we love Saucy Brew Works because it's the best bar in Columbus and because it's the best place to be in the world. So go to Saucy Brew Works. If your brew works, they might not be saucy with it. You need to warm up from the cold weather. Go into Saucy Brew Works, get some warm food and have some good times, some warm beer as well. Do it. Have fun.
We'll get to the business end of everything here in a moment. But first, I wanted to, because he certainly deserves it, a tribute to Federico Higuain, our beloved PIPA, played his final game over the weekend for Miami. I never did get used to him being in the pink kit. Alex, I know that you have a great love for the man, so I wanted to give you the floor right off the bat to just say whatever you want to say about PIPA.
Oh my goodness. It's really hard to talk about a player like Federico Higuain and like sum up what he means to fans in a few words. But, you know, I spent a lot of time thinking about this this season in particular, but over the last couple seasons. Now, I've been a Crew fan since 1996. I've had the pleasure of seeing a lot of great players kind of come and go. You know, Brian McBride, Frankie Hajduk, Brad Friedel, you name it, right? I think out of all of the players I've seen come and go, Federico Higuain is probably at this point my all-time favorite Crew player. I think the only person who really rivals him is Frankie Hajduk. The reason that PIPA is my favorite player is not so much because of his ability as a goal scorer or as a passer of the ball or as someone who kind of dictates the play of game, which he did throughout his time in Columbus. But really it was kind of his demeanor and the example that he set, not only for the other players, but for the city, for the fans, like what he represented. You know, I think I've talked about this on the podcast before in previous episodes, previous seasons, but I'm a big Serie A fan. I've been an AC Milan fan most of my life. And in Italy, there's a term for kind of these talismanic players that exist for teams that's called bandiera. And it's like not so much a captain, but the word basically translates to flag. It's someone who is kind of the flag bearer or the representative for your team, and not so much in like a, you know, the best player on your team, but it's really the person who represents your values, right? The person who makes the fans proud, makes the city proud, makes the community proud, because a lot of these teams up and down the table in Italy, you know, might be the smallest town in Italy, they've got a local team and they want to be proud of that team. Federico Higuain made me proud to be a Columbus fan. He was like a very humble player, very low key, worked really hard and just never gave up. I mean, he was just that kind of guy. I think that the thing that kind of stands out to me, and it's probably one of the moments he wishes would stand out the least, is when Kai Kamara went at him for that penalty, even though PIPA was the designated penalty taker.
Right.
And, you know, and Kai Kamara came over there and ripped the ball out of his hand and was like arguing with him about who's going to take this penalty. And you know, I'm trying really quickly as I talk here to kind of find the quotes that Pipa said after the game when he was asked about it. And you know, in the post-match interview, Kai Kamara had some not great things to say about Federico Higuain. Federico Higuain had nothing negative at all to say about Kai Kamara. I think basically his words were something like, "I'm a football player," or something like that. And you know, that's just the kind of guy he was. And you know, I think when you have a player like that, who just kind of has that attitude of, you know, I'm here to do this job. I'm proud to represent this city, and you know, I'm gonna leave it all out there, and you know, whatever happens, happens. But you know, I'm gonna try my hardest every single day. I'm gonna be humble about it, and I'm gonna do really good work. You know, that's the kind of player that I'm super proud of. So, you know, I watched his farewell interview where he was basically crying the entire time he was talking, just tears streaming down his face. You know, as he was kind of, you know, saying his goodbyes, he said, "From the very first day until tomorrow, when one plays football, all of the moments are beautiful." And what a great thing to say, and what a great attitude to have. And he made me truly proud to be a Crew fan. So I'm going to miss him. I saw that Dr. Pete sent out a tweet about him, saying something that he missed him, or I should find this tweet. But I don't know. It made me wonder if he's going to come back at some point. He said, "Columbus misses you, Pipa." And a bunch of fans were like, we don't have to miss him if he's here, right? So we'll see what happens. They seemed buddy buddy after the game, so hopefully he can come back and be a part of Columbus in the long term. I think he liked it here, and I hope he comes back.
If Ezra gets a coaching job, there's a vacancy.
Yeah, I mean,
or make a position for him. We're owned by the people who own the Cleveland Browns. We pay kickers millions of dollars up in Cleveland to lose football games and not make the playoffs in the NFL. We can find, you know, whatever it's going to cost Pipa to like be a brand ambassador, be something, right? Come up with some BS like position for him. Have him coach a team on the academy, right? He would be such a good academy coach.
Well, you know, and we're bringing the USL to Columbus, are we not? That's still in the pipeline, right?
Yeah. I mean, he would be a great coach.
Great coach for that as well. You know, I think of baseball, and a lot of organizations do this. They'll bring back a guy as a consultant. He's not a hitting coach. He's not a pitching coach. It's a guy, since I'm a Mariners fan, I think of Ichiro. He just hangs around and talks hitting with guys. And just if they want help, he's there to provide it. And I like that. Even I just want him attached to the organization in some way. And I'm glad you brought up the Kai Kamara moment, because it was so absurd. And it was just a brief moment in time where we learned everything we needed to know about both men, right? I mean, if that's all that you knew of Kai Kamara and Pipa was that brief moment in that game, as ridiculous as it was, you could say, well, I know what man Pipa is, and I know what kind of guy Kai Kamara is, and that's all you need to know. And, you know, obviously, he is a person held in such high regard that I agree with you. Hopefully, if that's what he wants to do, who knows? Maybe he just wants to put his feet up. He's got young kids, so maybe he just wants to spend time watching them grow up. We'll see. You know, it's up to him. The world is before him, and we appreciate very much his service to Columbus Crew. What a great and beloved player, and we'd love to see more of him. Now, Ori, on the front office side, Pat Onstad is on his way to Houston to be general manager, correct?
Correct. So that was initially tweeted out by Stu Holden. He added on authority and from some sources that Pat Onstad was going to go back to Houston. Of course, if you don't know, Pat Onstad was a former goalkeeper in MLS. He helped lead the Dynamo to their two MLS Cup titles in 06-07, including saving the winning penalty kick in the penalty shootout against the Revolution in 2006 to win MLS Cup. So he was a former player, you know, has connections with the Houston Dynamo, and the Dynamo hired him to be the general manager. The Crew confirmed that on Monday. So Pat Onstad, who obviously was a huge part of the front office for the past couple of years, he's been with He was part of Greg Berhalter's staff in 2014. He left the crew as the technical director and vice president of soccer operations. Very intelligent guy about the game. And now he, you know, he gets a job that he's always probably wanted. He said, this is a job that I've been waiting for, to be a general manager of a club. And, you know, Onstad brought a lot to the crew. So he's sorely going to be missed within the front office. It's going to be interesting to see whether the crew decide to hire someone from outside the club or they decide to hire in-house. So we'll see what happens there. And then I think Sam mentioned something that will also be interesting to watch in the offseason is the whereabouts of Ezra Hendrickson, if he's somebody that is going to be getting interviews for head coaching jobs in MLS. And there's going to be plenty of teams looking for head coaches around Major League Soccer. And I'm sure plenty of people are thinking Ezra Hendrickson maybe to FC Cincinnati is something that could make sense, but that's to be seen. But for sure, Pat Onstad will be missed within the front office. He is a key member of that team, but I think the crew will certainly find a suitable replacement, whether it's outside the club or within the club.
All right, very good. We've checked that item off our list here, and I want to get into the DC United game, and then we'll preview Chicago, and then talk about the playoff what-ifs and could-bes. We'll crunch the numbers, and we'll, you know, I don't know, say a spell or something to try to make this happen. Alex, I was pretty surprised in watching that match on Saturday that in the first half, I had abandoned all hope. I don't know about you.
I mean, I kind of abandoned all hope when I saw that it was going to be an away game. We don't have a great record on the road. So, like, it was one of those things where before the season starts, you're kind of like, okay, here are all of our away games. We might win one or two of these. Did not expect it to be this one, but extremely happy that it was. Also thought they played really well. I actually thought they looked great. Lucas was an animal out there. I mean, he was a machine.
Well, I think it was giving up a little bit rough. It was the early goal specifically. I should point out that early goal just really sucked the life out of me. You know, it's happened so often this season.
Well, and it's like about the worst start that you could have, right? And it just felt like, okay, this is it. This is the end of the season. Like, let's get it over with. I saw people on Twitter being like, cool, I'm turning off the game, which is always fun because then you can like tweet those people later and be like, hey, wake up, like turn your TV back on. But did not get off to a good start. But once they kind of found their footing, I thought the team actually played pretty well. I was impressed. Yeah,
they did things in really the last couple of games. They've done things that we've been wanting them to do all season. You know, that the Santos goal, the way in which he got loose, Lucas scoring another zinger, you know, and what have we said? I'd like him to shoot the ball more. And the last couple of games, he seems to have taken that upon himself, Ori, to do just that.
Yeah, no, offensive aggressiveness has obviously been significantly amped because of the stakes of these games. I think when you look at the way the offense and the attack has been playing, you want to see that more in the matches where it's not do or die, I think is kind of what people want to see. And what's interesting is the continuity of the lineups. Caleb Porter mentioned something that I totally agree with. The team has continuity. They're not having a lot of key injuries. Obviously, Jossie Zardes is a key injury, and not having Porter on the sideline certainly hinders chances. But, you know, the back line has been able to stay pretty consistent. Darlington Nagbe has played every game, usually with Hairston. Frazier's come in as a good replacement. But the three attacking midfielders have been the same, I think, for the last five games, Etienne, Zellerion, and Santos. And Etienne has started playing a little bit better in these last couple games. Santos and Zellerion are taking matters into their own hands. I mean, Lucas Zellerion, time and time again, proves just how clutch he is. He is this team's Cristiano Ronaldo. When they need a big moment in a big game from him, he delivers. We saw that with the Thunder goal against Orlando on Wednesday, and then with a beautiful curling effort against DC United on Saturday, which, let's face it, even though Jossie Zardes has been injured, Miguel Berry has slotted in perfectly. Learned a lot from Jossie Zardes with those near post runs to get that goal against Orlando. That layoff to Zellerion was perfect. So the continuity, in my opinion, is really keeping this team alive. And I think what the mentality you saw in that DC United game on Saturday, that's the road mentality that needs to be there every single game in 2022, because this, I think, stretch sort of proves that when healthy, no other factors outside, that this Crew team is one of the best teams in MLS. They're one of the hottest teams in the league right now. Three times, I think, in the last 5 or 6 weeks, they've had a player win player of the week, and they're playing great football. So 2022, if they have their cards dealt right, if they make the right offseason moves, if they stay healthy, this team has a shot. And I think this late stretch is proving that.
So you're saying one of the hottest teams in the league. Does that mean MLS Cup favorites there, Ori? Is that what you're saying?
One thing at a time.
You're saying Sharpie it in?
I'm not saying that. I mean, Caleb Porter did tell us, like, if they get in, they think they have a shot, which, to be fair, anybody has a shot. With the way that the East is, honestly, anybody who gets in the top seven has a shot. Because who knows? I mean, last year we saw Philadelphia win the Supporters Shield. What happened to them? They lose in the first game to the Revolution. Revolution have the best point total in MLS history. It doesn't give them the automatic right to get to the MLS Cup final. So anything's possible, but you got to get in first.
Yeah, and we'll get to that here in a few minutes. And for DC United, make no mistake, that was a huge game for them. And they may have just played themselves out of the playoffs. And they were a team that I was certainly kind of keeping an eye on as one of the seven, and now they sit level with the Crew at 44 points. They needed to get at least a tie there, and we certainly stuck a pin in their hopes. Orlando, you know, everybody except New England, if you're in contention, you need points, and we'll get to who plays who tomorrow, and of course everybody plays on Sunday here in a few minutes. Chicago Fire are a team that is going nowhere again. I haven't really thought about them too much in weeks, Ori. It's just
neither have Chicago fans.
Yeah, it's just another lost season. They moved it. You know, it's weird to me, Alex. I was flipping through the channels a couple of weeks ago, and suddenly the Fire were back out in the suburbs at the old place, and I was like, what is going on here?
I don't watch them enough to be able to tell you what's going on.
I turned it off, but it's...
There was probably a football game.
No, I don't think. I think it was just. It was. I don't think so. I don't know what was going on.
Because I thought they'd go back to Bridgeview if the Bears are playing.
Yeah, what do you mean?
Whether it's on like before them or after them, there's something about how the field has to be set up for the Bears.
Oh, okay, all right. Well, that's fine. I mean, that you talk about a franchise that's just adrift. Another lost season for them. You know, Barrich is a guy that coming out of last season, I thought could really offer a lot. He has 8 goals on the year. Ori, is there, I imagine you haven't had a chance to debrief Caleb Porter and his thoughts on Chicago yet. What are your thoughts?
Obviously, it's a team that's just kind of playing for pride at this point. I mean, I'm looking at some of their latest results towards the end of the season. You know, a loss to Toronto to start October, tied New England at Gillette Stadium. Had that big comeback against FC Cincinnati. I excuse my laughter because it's just a common thread. They won that game 4-3, and since he was up in stoppage time 3-3, or no, they tied it in stoppage time 3-3. So it's a team playing for pride, and it's not like they're just going to belly up and just let the Crew beat them 7 or 8-0. They're going to go out there and try and play, because the Chicago Fire, similarly to the Crew in a way, are trying to engineer sort of this new era of the club. They have a new identity with a new logo. They're going to change their jerseys here soon for next season. And they're trying to breathe new life into the team. Obviously, playing at Soldier Field was one of those steps. We'll see where that goes. We'll see if the Chicago Fire turn into a competitive team. So it'll be an interesting game. But last time they came to Columbus was that all-important final game at Historic Crew Stadium. And Chicago had no chance in that game. So we'll see. The occasion is similar, because this is another game where Caleb Porter is going to tell his players, we have to win. And potentially goal difference might be taken into account.
Yeah.
So we need to go out there and just all out attack, score 7-8 goals, whatever we can do to potentially make the playoffs. So it's a similar situation. Alex is holding his phone, though.
I mean, they kind of did that to DC back in 2015. So.
Right. Yeah.
I hate to be the attendance guy, but do you know what their average season attendance is in Soldier Field?
What is it?
8,000.
10,966. Their season high attendance, the highest attendance they have had all season at Soldier Field in Chicago, a gigantic city, is 14,898 against Atlanta on July 3rd.
Yeah, the crew, every crew home game has had more than 14,000 people attended, I'm pretty sure, this season.
I'm pretty sure like Crew Fest had 14,000 people. Like, that's crazy.
That's nuts. That's
their best. That cavernous, ugly stadium.
Yeah.
And just no atmosphere. But, you know, they're in the city now. And there's a lot of people looking for stuff to do. And yet they're looking elsewhere. I mean, you can't really blame them.
Right. It's also a city that has historical, you know, bigger sports teams in there. You know, Bears is always important. The Bulls are good now. So people are interested in the Bulls. Baseball always has an interest in Chicago, the Blackhawks too, but it's tough for these MLS teams in these gigantic cities where they have to compete with these other sports. But I think one shining example of that is a team like LAFC or even the Galaxy, because they sort of tapped into the, you know, high Hispanic population in California. They know they're interested in soccer and they've been able to get big attendance numbers, create a bit of a culture around their clubs. Whereas for a team like the Chicago Fire, or maybe a team like New York City, who plays in a baseball stadium, you know, you don't have as much of that culture. Whereas it's easier for a team like Nashville or Columbus that doesn't have a lot of professional sports teams to develop a little bit more of a culture within the club.
Well, I don't really have a whole lot else to say about Chicago. They're just, ugh. I mean, is there anybody, you know, I mentioned Barrich, is there anybody else, Ori, that scares you?
Not particularly. I want to say, I mean, Luka Stojanovic is a really good player. I think he's someone to watch out for in the game, but this is probably the one game this season where the crew are going to go into it and fans are going to go into it just thinking, I am not thinking about the matchups of the other team. I am not thinking about how the other team plays. All I'm thinking about is how are we going to get into the playoffs and how many goals do we potentially need to score to potentially make the playoffs?
Yeah, that's, you know, you brought up goal differential, and we'll get to those sorts of questions here in a moment, because it is something that you don't think about. And certainly I've been eyeing the Crew's goal differential. We're at a minus one now. It was worse than that before. That's something now that we have to take into account as well. Let's see how we all think we're going to add to our goal differential on Sunday at 3:30 as the Crew take on Chicago at lower.com. Everybody's playing at the same time on Sunday.
3 o'clock.
There'll certainly be a lot of scoreboard watching. Sam, give me your pick.
For Chicago? Yeah. I think it will be a 2-0 Crew win.
2-0. Hmm. All right. See if we can
You might have heard that before.
With Ori.
I'm going to go way out of the box. I'm going to say they win 5-1. Because I think we see the offense is playing well. They are going to have they're not going to give a care in the world. And if goal difference is going to take into account, Caleb Porter told us that he's confident his team can score and they're going to do whatever they can to just ride up the tally. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say they win 5-1 and try whatever they can. Throw the kitchen sink, everything behind the kitchen sink, take the whole house and chuck it at the goal and win 5-1.
Yeah. I kind of see where you're coming from on that. I'll give my pick here in a second. That's kind of how I was thinking, though. Alex?
I'm going to say 2-1. I think the Crew will win. I think we'll dominate the game, but I think we'll give up some sort of garbage, boneheaded move. Vito's going to make a mistake or something, and we'll screw up. But I think we'll win. And I think that Nora on tour will have, like, 6 people here, and they'll still make more noise than the entire Chicago crowd, so it'll be good.
I got us 5-0. I think it's going to be the way we're playing right, our form right now. Chicago is nothing to play for. We have a lot to play for. 5-0. That's what I got. Any injuries we ought to be concerned about, or that we don't already know about?
I think it's pretty much going to be the same going into Sunday. You won't see Jossy Zardes. One good piece of news from Tuesday's training session. I saw Jacob Myers, the Dispatch reporter, tweeting about it. Artur and Aiden Morris were both training with the team. They were both in warmups with the rest of the first team. So they are essentially back on the road to getting back onto the field. Artur is not going to play on Sunday, but I would expect the lineup to be very similar to what we've seen the past weeks after they got some significant rest. I think we'll see Room. I think Morera starts at right back. I think it'll be Mensah Williams and Valenzuela, Nagby Hairston, Etienne Zelarayan, Santos and Barry. I think that's going to be the lineup. I think they're going to continue with the lineup that's worked for them the past couple of weeks. And I'd be very interested to see what kind of subs we do see off the bench, because Caleb Porter has not really used his subs as much. I mean, I think Zelarayan, Santos are going to play the full 90. I think Etienne might play the full 90. Nagby's not coming off the field. Mensah and Williams would probably not come off the field. So it'll be very interesting to see what substitutes he might use and what kind of a mentality and what kind of a game they play. Because I don't know if any, for anyone who listens or anybody here that watches Ted Lasso, the last episode of season one, spoiler alert, kind of goes into sort of this, I need other results to help me. So whether or not they're going to go into that locker room looking at the scores at the other games to see what they need to do in the second half will be remain to be seen. So,
yeah. Well, they need a lot to happen, Corey. And I know that you don't have all the information you need yet because there's a couple of matches tomorrow, but kind of give us an overview of what this is going to take. And a lot of it involves games that we're not playing, obviously. So
most of it
out of our hands. Yeah, obviously.
Most of it is out of the crew's hands, which, you know, to be in a position like this is not great as a team because you have to rely on others to help get what you need. And if the crew don't make the playoffs, we will and they will certainly look back at some of those losses that they had over the past season and think, you know, if we just had, you know, that last gasp of focus or energy, we would have been able to make the playoffs. But the simplest thing I can say, so everybody knows, if the crew don't win, they don't make the playoffs. There is no situation where the crew draw or lose to Chicago that they make the playoffs. They have to win. Watch out on Wednesday. You'll be listening to this on Wednesday morning, Wednesday evening, tonight. The Red Bulls are hosting Atlanta, and CF Montreal will be hosting the Pat Onstad GM'd Houston Dynamo. Those will be the two matches to keep an eye on. And the best situation likely for those matches would be Atlanta beating the Red Bulls and Houston beating Montreal. Because the way the table is at the time of recording this is probably the best situation the crew can be in. Because the crew need to be able to have a simple scenario going into Sunday. And the simplest scenario is being able to win and have one or two other teams lose. And all you have to do is hop above them to seventh place and have more points. The worst situation for the crew would be if a tiebreaker scenario goes into account with the likes of a team like the Red Bulls or DC United. Because if the crew has the same amount of points as the Red Bulls after decision day, it will likely be goal difference that tie breaks it. Red Bulls have six, Columbus has minus one. Hence the fact that the crew would need to score more goals. DC United is an even tougher situation because DC United owns the tiebreaker over Columbus with wins. So if Columbus has the same amount of wins as DC, but the goal difference is different and they have worse, then they don't make it. So it's complicated right now. Thursday we'll have a much, much clearer picture, but the simplest scenario that I can think of going into Sunday, assuming the Red Bulls and Montreal lose on Wednesday, is the crew go on Sunday and win. Then you need DC United to lose to Toronto, which is a tough ask. Toronto's not great. And then you would need the Red Bulls to lose to Nashville in Nashville. In that situation, the crew would have 47 points. Red Bulls would have 46. DC would have 44. And assuming, and if Montreal loses on Wednesday, their maximum is 46. So Montreal loses on Wednesday, they can only hop over the crew if the crew loses. So Montreal losing on Wednesday would basically take out someone off of the table. It would make things a lot easier, but we'll have a full breakdown on Thursday of everything. I'll crunch the numbers and do my job and figure out everything that needs to happen. There's already some scenario charts on Twitter. Brian, what do you got?
Well, I'm just, you know, does it really boil down at this point to that DC United has to lose to Toronto? Is it that simple?
They could draw.
Well, that's
true. They could draw because if the crew wins and DC draws, then Columbus has 47 and DC has 45. Hopping over DC is simpler than hopping over the Red Bulls. Yeah. Things get really complicated if the Red Bulls beat Atlanta, because then the crew would only be able to tie Atlanta on points if the crew wins and Atlanta loses to Cincinnati.
Yeah, that's not going
to. And I don't know if the crew wants FC Cincinnati to hold on to their playoff hopes, because We all know how that's gone this season.
Well, you know, the way I look at it is this. Atlanta is at 47 points. I would just let them go in your mind.
Exactly.
Just let them go. It's really one spot, four teams for one spot. I mean, it boils down to that. And the fact that Montreal is 1 point behind us, they have a weird Wednesday game with Houston, as if it was drawn out of a hat or something. At this point in the season, why are they playing Houston? It's so weird. And of course, Houston, 12th out of 13 in the Western Conference, as Texas brings up the rear in the MLS Western Conference this season, with Austin, of course, buried in last place. So I don't think we can realistically expect much of an effort from Houston at this point. But who knows? It's MLS. It can get weird. Knows? But, you know, you let Atlanta go and you worry mostly about New York and DC United, and you hope that your old pals up there in Toronto can at least somehow sneak out of there with a tie.
Yep. You know, I mean, and then you need help from Nashville. That's the simplest scenario. But
and Nashville is a lot to play for, and it's a good team.
Right. So, yeah. Nashville's trying to get number two in the conference, which earns them a home game against if the crew makes the playoffs, then they're playing either Nashville or Philadelphia, most likely.
Yeah.
On the road. Because their crew can't get higher than, I would say, the seventh seed. I don't think they can be number six. I think that would be massive.
I think it's because Atlanta's playing New York that there's no way that can happen.
I think also because the fact that Atlanta plays New York is why the crew are partially still alive, because one of those two teams can't both teams can't gain 3 points from their 33rd game. One team is either gaining three and having zero, or one, or both are having only 1 point. So that definitely adds, but it's definitely easier to catch up to the Red Bulls than it is to Atlanta, because you know, if Atlanta has 47 points and the crew has 47 points too, then the tiebreakers for that would be a lot tougher, because the crew has a much worse goal difference than Atlanta. Atlanta potentially could have a tie with wins. Then it would come down to potentially goals scored. The crew has 44, Atlanta has 43. You know, there's a ton of variables that will go into it. It'll be a lot clearer after Wednesday night, but in my eyes, Wednesday night's games, you want Atlanta to beat the Red Bulls and you want Houston to beat Montreal. That makes things as simple as possible going into Sunday. That means the crew can get in seventh place purely on points. If you leave it to tiebreakers, then they could win 6 or 7-0 and they could still not make the playoffs.
Right. Okay. Well, we'll see. And the game kicks.
But it will be fun to watch them win 6 or 7-0 though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we could have utter chaos. Neutrals are going to root for chaos, where you have like a 3-way tie between like Atlanta, the Red Bulls, and DC, and 4-way tie. I mean, who the hell knows what could happen? So we'll see. We'll see what happens. It's going to be fun on Sunday.
Yeah, everything kicks off at 3:30 on Sunday afternoon, and that includes your Columbus Crew and Chicago Fire. Before we go, Alex, FC Cincinnati, they were up in this game 3-1, were they not?
Listen, they're something else, man. They're a historically bad team. I think they were. Wasn't it 3-1?
Yeah.
I'm trying to go back and look at this.
For the Nashville game?
Yeah, they were up 3-1 against 3-1. Up 3-1, lost 6-3. They lost to Miami 5-1. They lost to the Chicago 4-3. They lost to Philly 2-0. I mean, they gave up, what is that, 15 goals in a 3-game stretch, and they gave up 9 goals to two of the worst teams in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, they've given up 72 goals. What's the MLS record, I wonder?
Gee, I'm going to look that up right now.
They might be closing in on that. 72 goals surrendered, a minus 36 goal differential.
One win at their new stadium, which Dos Acero is about to happen there.
Yeah. How funny would that be if they finish a full season in their new stadium and U.S. or Mexico have the same number of total wins. Oh my god,
that would be crazy.
It's like it's almost not even fun to make fun of them anymore, because it feels like you're making fun of like someone who is so down on their luck. I don't even know how to describe it. Right, it's like watching a lightweight fight a heavyweight and then laughing at the lightweight when they get like all their they get their face caved in, right? Like, it's just not, at a certain point, it's not even funny. But
so Brian,
I tweeted out.
Go ahead,
Alex. Oh,
I tweeted out earlier this year that, like, I'm convinced that FC Cincinnati is a CIA psychological operation.
Yeah.
The whole team was funded by, you know, a black budget for the Central Intelligence Agency, and they're really just trying to figure out how much misery human beings can endure before they snap. And I feel like we're approaching that point where they're going to snap. I feel like if you go up 3-1, right, and then you lose 3-6, like, that's not even, that's almost like more insulting as a fan than if you like lose. If I'm going to get like a loss like that, I want to lose 3-4 with like the fourth goal coming in stoppage time, right? I don't want to get blown out when I go 3-4.
The same way they lost against Chicago with a cracker of a goal.
They are finding new ways every week to just make their fans want to become like tennis fanatics, right? Or like, the fact that they have season ticket holders at the end of the season that people are like actually renewing blows my mind.
So how has their attendance been lately? Does anyone know how they've been drawn lately?
I think they've been fine attendance wise.
Yeah.
But you want to know the record for the most goals conceded in MLS history?
Yeah.
75. So since he would need to concede four more, you know who holds the record for the most goals allowed in an MLS season? FC Cincinnati in 2019.
Ooh.
Their inaugural season, they gave up 75 goals in a season, and they now hold two of the three worst defensive seasons in MLS history in three seasons as a club.
It's so bad. And I will tell you, one of my favorite things is I saw an FC Cincinnati fan arguing on Twitter with another FC Cincinnati fan. And they were arguing about whether they had two wooden spoons or three. And the reason that they were saying that they only had two was last season was like a COVID season, so it didn't count. And like, and people didn't, they didn't actually award the Anthony Precourt Memorial wooden spoon, in that it was like, it was just not an official season because nothing counted. It was a weird year. And I'm like, listen, if you bookend that weird year with wooden spoons, like, you might as well claim the one in the middle too. Okay. Everybody else knows it's yours. Just own it. It's fine. But, you know, Jeff Birding said that they made it to Mount Everest. So they made it to the summit of Mount Everest. So God, if this is Mount Everest, I really hate to see like what happens when they aren't on the summit of Mount Everest for a little bit.
Yeah. Well, that is
crazy. Hey, Cincinnati is also one loss away from tying the longest losing streak in MLS history at 12, set by the 1999 New York, New Jersey Metro Stars. So they now own also the second worst losing streak in MLS history, while the Columbus Crew continue to hold the longest unbeaten streak in regular season MLS history.
But some of those, that Metro Stars record is kind of unique because that was back in the era of no ties and when it would go to penalty shootout. So they actually have the longest losing streak in MLS history outside of losing in like these early day like shootouts. So truly historic team. You love to see it. Remember that all FC Cincinnati fans were once Columbus Crew fans. So have no mercy for them. They made their choice. They can come back at any time. If they can just eat a little bit of crow, they can come back to a team that fully functions and it's not owned by a bunch of idiots. So, you know, it's really funny when you have two sports teams in a league in the state of Ohio, one of which is owned by Jimmy and D Haslam, and the team that's owned by the Haslams, like, just dramatically outperforms the other one. Like, how bad of a sports owner do you have to be to get lapped by the owners of the Cleveland Browns, right?
Yeah.
Crazy.
And even in an off season, because the Crew are, despite having a relatively disappointing season, have still amassed 24 more points than Cincinnati this year.
Yeah, I would absolutely become like a cricket fan or something if I was born in Cincinnati, if I had the misfortune of being from the city of Cincinnati.
I mean,
I would have to figure something else out at that point, right?
Even Austin has more points than Cincinnati this season, and they're a brand new team with no striker.
Well, I'll tell you, it's a real indictment on how this team was built the fact that, they struggled so mightily defensively. Because in my mind, when you're building a new franchise, you've got to make sure that you take care of that end of the game to give yourself a chance. And when you're giving up that number of goals, you have no chance, you know?
Yeah. And the only sinew that connects all of these failures is Jeff Birding. And he still is employed by FC Cincinnati. They fired multiple GMs, multiple coaches. They fired everybody. They fired their like social media team at one point early on and brought like Alex Steck from Columbus down there, right?
Right.
For no apparent reason. They fired everybody except Jeff Birding, and nothing changes.
Yeah.
So the definition of insanity lives on in the city of Cincinnati, in that beautiful new stadium they've got down there. I just hope that the United States can like snap the streak there. Yeah, I've seen Cincinnati fans like not joking talk about bringing a priest to the field to like try to exorcise the demons.
I don't
like,
think that's like, a bad idea.
Like, I think
maybe
serious.
They ought to look into that.
Like, they were not even saying it as like a joke. Like, something psychologically is wrong with like the players. Can we get like a priest down here so that they can like mentally clear it all out of their own heads?
Voodoo,
right?
Some voodoo or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Something, man. It's crazy. I'm not even getting enjoyment out of reading their Reddit feed anymore, because it's just like a bunch of people saying, LOL, of course I'm going to bed over and over again.
Yeah. What else are you going to do? Yeah, all right, well, let's get out of here and look forward to the Chicago game on Sunday, the last game of a very long season. Started in early March, and the march to the finish, hopefully it doesn't end on Sunday against Chicago, and the Crew can go on and maybe make a little noise in the playoffs. Who knows? Defend their title. All right, Ori, give me that Saucy Brewers love one more time.
For sure, we love Saucy Brewers because it's the best bar in Columbus and place to be on the planet. Saucy Brewers, if your brew works, why not be saucy with it? They're on 443 West 3rd Avenue. Have some fun, have some food, have some drinks.
Like and subscribe to the Massport Podcast. We would appreciate that very much. Ori, Alex, Sam, thank you for your time. My name is Brian. Listen to my radio station, CD92.9. I would appreciate it. I know I asked a lot of you there. We do appreciate your time and your attention. And we'll hopefully not be wrapping up the season next week. We'll be previewing the playoffs. Who knows what's going to happen? But join us again next week for another edition of the Master Report Podcast. Thanks for listening.